This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Alex Chadwick. The extraordinary wildlife photographer Franz Lanting, who's been everywhere to shoot everything, cannot get over one creature, the albatross. Those are fledgling albatrosses you're hearing, recorded on a Pacific island on an earlier National Geographic radio expedition, partly inspired by Franz. These enormous birds soar incredible distances. They mate for life, which can be 60 years. A pair produces a single egg a year. I knew Franz had been working on an albatross story for more than a year, and then, a couple of days ago, he called. Franz Lanting, where are you?
I'm in the middle of a huge albatross colony in the Falkland Islands.
The Falklands, isolated in the southern Atlantic, fought over by Britain and Argentina more than 20 years ago. Really remote. But Franz had a satellite phone, and he offered to do a radio expedition's interview.
In front of me is one of the world's largest colonies of black-browed albatrosses. There are more than 30,000 albatrosses from my vantage point.
Well, I can hear some of them anyway.
Indeed, this is an extraordinary sight. I can see at least 30,000 birds from where I'm at, but the colony stretches for another 2 miles along the shoreline of this island called Steeple Jason.
Describe these albatrosses, would you, Franz?
Superficially, if you don't know them, you may think of them as huge seagulls, but they're something entirely different. They have a wingspan of about 7 feet, and what makes them truly remarkable is that they're the ultimate frequent flyers on this planet. These birds don't flap their wings like other birds do, but they use the wind's energy instead, and they fly phenomenal distances. An average black-browed albatross may cover 100 miles a day during its lifespan of more than 40 years, which adds up to maybe 1.5 million miles during its lifetime.
Why do they fly on like that, 100 miles a day? What are they doing?
They're seabirds, and they're looking around for fish and squid, and that's not very evenly distributed on the open oceans. So they have to get around using as little energy as possible, and that's why they've become gliders. They use the wind's energy instead of expending their own.
You're there with a writer, Carl Safina. He's the author of a book, Eye of the Albatross. Is Carl there?
Yes, Carl is standing next to me. Here he comes.
Hello.
Carl, so these birds, they're seabirds, and they are all over the world except in the North Atlantic. You can find them everywhere.
Usually they are far from land, not within sight of beaches. They do not nest on any continent. They nest on the most distant island groups and usually on small little islands at the edges of those island groups.
Despite these remote locations where the birds colonize and breed, I read there are 21 or 22 different species of albatrosses. 19 of them face extinction.
Well, 19 of them are declining because of activities caused by people. You know, a lot of people write that they face extinction, but I think that that's really premature. They have problems. They are declining as a result of things that people are doing, mostly because they get killed in fishing gear. But we have time, and we have the technology already to completely tackle that problem if we choose to. And in fact, progress is being made in some places on that.
They're snared by commercial fishing vessels that use these long lines to catch fish. I mean, what kind of technology can you use to save albatrosses from a fishing hook?
Well, they're vulnerable to fishing lines when the lines are being used near the vessel. In other words, when the line is first being let out before it sinks, because they're not really diving birds. They catch all of their food at or near the surface of the ocean. So if you can make the line sink fast, or if you can put something out behind the boat that will scare them or keep them away from where the line is before it sinks, you can start catching albatrosses. You know, in the last 5 years, we've really developed these techniques. The trick now is to spread them around and make it part of what fishing fleets do. But in the meantime, yes, there is a serious problem. And so for many of the species, we have time. For some of them, time is really of the essence, or else we'll lose something that is extremely special and that we won't be able to get back again.
Carl, can I speak to Franz Lanting again, please?
Absolutely. Here he is.
Hi, Alex.
Franz, I know you've had a long fascination with these birds, but of all these places that you've been over the last year, why did you call us now?
Because this is a truly extraordinary place. So many birds in front of you, you know, the vitality of it. Yeah, in all the years that I've covered the world for National Geographic, I can think of few places as spectacular as this one.
But it sounds very barren. No trees, just this kind of windswept rock and the oceans all around you and the birds.
Indeed, but there are these thousands and thousands of birds, all with their own lives. And when you walk into the colony, as I'm doing right now, you know, every bird has its own story. I can see, you know, adults coming back from sea and working their way into the colony to meet up with their partners. I see younger birds that are looking for mates, that are trying to establish nest sites of their own. It's a society. It's a society of seabirds.
Photographer Franz Lanting speaking with us from Steeple Jason Island in the Western Falklands, along with his writing partner, Carl Safina. Hey, Franz, would you do one thing? Can you just hold that phone there for a moment and let us hear these birds?
Yes, I'll walk into the colony and just hold the phone near the birds so you can hear them yourself. Did you hear that, Alex?
I did indeed. Franz Lanting, world-renowned photographer and now sound recordist as well. Franz, thank you.
Good to talk with you, Alex. Bye-bye.